The following talk is freely offered. If you'd like to learn more about the Sydney Zen Centre or to make a donation, please visit our website at szc.org.au.
The theme for today's talk is called Suffering and the End of Suffering. The Buddha said, "I teach only one thing, and that is there is suffering in this life, and there is an end to suffering." The fact that there's an end to suffering is a great proclamation. It's good news for the restless and weary and the anguish in our hearts. And of course, suffering and the quest around suffering, this is the Buddha's great koan and question: why do people suffer? What are the causes of suffering? How does this come about? Is there relief and peace and release from suffering? And we don't have to look too deeply to see the suffering in our world and in ourselves. Not getting what we want is suffering. Maybe not getting that extra biscuit. Losing what we have and what is dear and precious to us causes suffering. Being separated from who we love causes us suffering. And if we cling and attach to this mind and body and our feelings, perceptions, views and consciousness, and this will inevitably change, if we cling to that, it will cause suffering as we age and die. Seeing others in pain causes suffering. Seeing animals in pain causes suffering. So the classic teachings point out that the root causes of much of our suffering are greed, hatred, and delusion. And these three roots blind us from seeing reality clearly, and they are the very factors that give rise to further suffering. And we chant every day in our Bodhisattva vows, our great vows: though greed, hatred, and delusion rise endlessly, I vow to abandon them. And this abandoning of greed, hatred, and delusion is called nirvana, the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion. Nirvana is also called the undying and uncreated because it's not a condition or state, but a joyous natural peace and happiness that arises when we no longer cling and grasp after the world. There are some basic misperceptions and delusions we have about reality. In a fundamental way, we are deluded about happiness, permanence, and the nature of who we think we are. These three delusions cause much of our suffering. Most human beings want and desire happiness, but we often search for happiness in all the wrong ways. We often feel that the pursuit of creature comforts and pleasure will provide happiness, and it does provide a certain amount of ease and security. But when we become so entangled and attached to the pleasures of the senses through the six senses, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, and if these conditions change, which they always do, then our attachment creates the unhappiness. When we investigate our delusions about happiness, we see that these forms of happiness that come through the sense doors are incomplete and do not bring about true and lasting fulfillment. Another common misperception is to think that changing our outer circumstances is the path to true happiness. Genuine happiness arises from healthy states of mind. It is born of wise and gracious heart. In the Transmission of Light, the Denku Roku, in case 30, Kan Chi Daishi went to the 29th patriarch, Taiso Daishi, and said, "Your disciple is suffering from a fatal sickness," apparently leprosy he had at the time. I beg your reverence, to release me from my sins." There's an association here that those kind of sicknesses in those days and leprosy was due to creating some bad karma or sinful kind of actions. And the patriarch said, bring me your sins and I will release them for you. The master sat for a while and then said, I cannot find my sins anywhere in spite of all my efforts. The patriarch then said, there, I have already released you, your sins for you. You should live depending on the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. So searching for our sins. Yeah. And he discovers that deep down, cannot find them anywhere. The sinner, there is mistakes and there's things that we do wrong in those kind of actions. But the sinner is not to be found. Yeah? Not so long ago, recently, I was experiencing quite a degree of suffering and grief and pain. And all I could do was, those waves of kind of pain kept coming and day in, day out. So all I could do was just simply attend and attend and attend. Yeah? Bring my attention to that. There was nothing else to do in some sense. Yeah? So bringing my full attention to that pain and to that grief was interesting in a way. It was actually an extraordinarily intense practice. And so there wasn't any kind of avoidance and dismissing and pushing away from the pain, and nor was there kind of wallowing in the pain as woe is me, as poor is me, you know, how hard done by am I? None of that either. Not amplifying the story around the pain and the grief either. So as I kept attending to the pain, it was like I went to the bottom of that well of pain and discovered that there was no sufferer there. There was no one to suffer. And this was kind of a kind of profound release in a way through the portal of pain. Yes, there is pain, but the one who suffers is gone, he's not there. Yeah? And the same is true of we make a mistake and these are causes and conditions and sometimes things happen, 10,000 mistakes every day. One moment after another. Life is one long, big mistake sometimes. Yeah. But at the bottom of that, there is the one who we think is a failure. We can easily identify with those mistakes, thinking, oh, I am a failure. We really look closely and investigate that. There is mistakes, but there is no one who is a failure. Yeah. We can suffer from anxiety and conditions like that that arise and pass away due to kind of various kind of triggers. And so the anxiety too, when seen through and experienced and fully present with that, we don't have to identify in there that there's, I am an anxious person. Yeah? That's attaching a sense of identity to the experience, to the condition. We let that go. Then there's no one who suffers. There's suffering, but no one who suffers. So liberation from suffering doesn't mean that therefore we don't experience that pain or sadness. It is an attitudinal shift towards the waves of pain and hurt and despair and anxiety. Suffering too has no inherent permanent nature. It too will pass, and it is not our true nature. Clouds do not obscure the vast sky of our nature. The second basic delusion or misperception about reality is about permanence. We delude ourselves by thinking that we can hold on to our experiences, people, memories, feelings, our perceptions, our worldview, our lifestyle, our possessions, our position, our role, our loved ones. We are deluded because, I remember one time I was at What Buddha Dharma and I was thinking about clinging and the kind of had this perception about myself as all these little tentacles going out into the world and clinging on to various things that I loved. My car, various other things. And it was like, I just thought, oh my God, the world is covered with cling wrap. My mind was just cling wrap everywhere. It was just like this sense of cling wrap pervaded the whole universe. Yeah. So in our delusion, we think we are not going to grow old, that our superannuation is secure, our marriages will not change, our children will not leave home and go abroad. We are lulled back to sleep when we take basic circumstances and conditions for life for granted. Japanese Zen master Kobai Daishi Issa, who wrote beautiful poetry and haiku expressed with such poignancy in a poem he wrote after his beloved daughter died. He said, "Life is a dewdrop. Yes, I am perfectly convinced. Life is a dewdrop hanging on a leaf. And yet, and yet, and yet." That dewdrop metaphor expresses the beauty and transience about our lives. Issa knows this at a deep level, but it's the poignancy of the and yet. It's the loss of the personal, the particular, his daughter in that case, the individual character, the unique constellation that makes up the personality that we miss and grieve over. And there's another deep grieving that we do when we start to really see into the impermanent nature, to experience this transience and emptiness of all things. We start to really notice the shifting sands of time. And we go through at times a genuine mourning for the insubstantiality of life. Yeah, it's the and yet. Yeah. The grief that comes before the insight of joy. Yeah. There's a grieving in really seeing this insubstantiality. And we need to honour that. It's a genuine, deep grief. And we struggle to maintain and hold on to our world, yet it slips through our fingers of time and our days vanish like a dream or a mirage. In our miscellaneous cards, we take up the verse of the Diamond Sutra, which the Buddha recommended that we contemplate in order to cultivate wise detachment from appearances and abide in real truth. He said, "One should think of this fleeting world like a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream." And I was reminded of this image of dream, this piece of calligraphy, one of the 3-month training periods that I did in the Maui Zendo in on the island of Maui, Aiken Roshi Zendo, in Hawaii. And there was a huge piece of calligraphy in the library and dining room area, and it was just one piece of a character, and it was dream. And it was Yasutani Roshi's last piece of calligraphy he did before he died. Dream. Yeah, to remind us, yeah, this fleeting world. And it's important to directly experience this fleeting world, not just at some kind of intellectual conceptual level, but at the deepest level, that cellular level. And we have that opportunity here in our practice, observing and being with the bodily nature of sensations and feelings and thoughts and sounds and each and everything in flux every moment. Suzuki Roshi summed it up in his simple phrase in saying, "It is not always so." That was his mantra. It is not always so. Experience comes trooping out of emptiness day and night, writes the Sufi poet Rumi. to experience the breath in each step, the changing light of day and night, as the unstoppable river. This deep experience of impermanence of life teaches us that there is not a permanent entity, yeah, in here, the me, the I, that is experiencing this unstoppable river. We are that unstoppable river. Yeah? That's what we are. We are that unstoppable river of causes and conditions. An enlightened person does not obscure the law of cause and effect, so beautifully articulated by Alan yesterday. We always think that there's somebody else in here experiencing this unstoppable river. Look deeply. Yeah. No one there. The deepest misperception and delusion of all is forgetting who we really are. In the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the discourse on not self-characteristics, which was given by the Buddha to his disciples, it's one of the great discourses. And I'll read you some of the discourse so you get some of the language of the suttas, which is rather dense and complicated and repetitive, but it gives you a flavour of the early teachings. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying at Varanasi in the game refuge at Isipatana. Then he addressed the group of five monks. The body, monks, is not self. If the body were the self, this body would not lend itself to impermanence and disease. It would be possible with regard to the body. Let my body be thus, let my body not be thus. But because the body is not self, the body lends itself to disease and impermanence. So then he asked the monks, how do you think about this, monks? Is the body constant or inconstant? Inconstant, Lord. And is that which is inconstant easeful or stressful? Stressful, Lord. And is it fitting to regard what is inconstant, stressful, subject to change, as this is mine, this is myself, this is what I am? No, Lord. And so it goes on. He goes on. Feeling is not self. If feeling were the self, this feeling would not lend itself to disease and change. And so on. And he goes through the whole. Perception is not self. Mental processes are not self. Consciousness is not self. So he takes up the five skandhas, which are summarized in Heart Sutra. So, thus monks, body, feelings, perceptual, mental formations, consciousness are to be seen as they actually are, with right discernment. This is not mine. This is not myself. This is not what I am. And when the explanation had been given, the hearts of the group of five, through lack of clinging to wrong view and having right discernment, we're released from mental suffering. Don't you just love it after all the sutras? Doesn't matter if there's 100 or 500 disciples, suddenly they all get it. Oh, it would have been great to be there. Yunmen, in case 47 in the Blue Cliff Records, sums this sutta up in a very poignant, cogent way, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And when a monk asks Yunmen, what is the Dharmakaya? The Dharmakaya, it means the pure, clear body of the Buddha. So the monk's asking, what is the pure, clear body of the Buddha? And Yunmen said, the six ungraspables. Six ungraspables are the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Yeah? The Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. The six ungraspables is, this is Buddha, right here. Yeah? Body being touch. Yeah? Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Yunmen went straight to the core. In the 31st case in the Denkuroku, Transmission of Light, the 31st patriarch, Dai Zenji, made his bows before Kanchi Daishi and said, "I beg the compassion of your reverence. Please teach me the Dharma, the way of emancipation from suffering." The patriarch said, "Who is binding you?" The master said, "No one is binding me." The patriarch said, "Then why should you search for emancipation?" Hearing this, the master had great realization. That's all right, we can appreciate it. Doesn't it trigger just a twinge of jealousy? So simple. Huh? The penny drops. What they don't tell you, of course, is that 20 or 30 years that go into practice, you know, before this conversation, that's why the master suddenly gets it. Yeah. Okay. So the poem in this case, which is so beautiful. "The mind of vacant pure wisdom has no right or wrong. No one can tell what is bound or released. Though it is divided into 5 skandhas and 4 elements, seeing and hearing, colours and voices are no other than that." So when you realise that there is no one binding you, not I, not me, not mine, attached to our present conditions and experiences, yeah, then there is grace and letting go. The Tao Te Ching explains, when we let go of being the one who suffers, we are free to bring blessings wherever we go. When we let go of the poor me, or woe is me, or I'm hard done by, or attachment to our story, our identity. Yeah? Lindy shared a lovely dream this morning, which is very fitting for this case. I've got permission to kind of share it with you. It's a dream about not me. Not I, not me, not myself. Lindy dreamt that she was dressed in this white skirt, and she had these interesting green shoes that had flowers all over them. She had this very colourful handbag as well that she was carrying around. And so she's kind of looking at herself in this dream. It's like, woo, this is not me. Not self. For a person who only ever wears black, not only in the Zendo, but in her daily life, dressed in colourful white hippie clothes and skirts, is definitely not Lindy. So, not myself, not I, not me. And so we can only see that, you know, not just in the dream, you know, it's a kind of lovely dream, playful, creative dream. But, you know, this is the way we need to look at ourselves, you know, in many aspects of ourselves. And this is, I'd like to read you also Dogen Zenji's kind of realization experience too in the Denkuroku. Transmission of Light, which is the version of not me, not I, not myself, yeah? The dropping away of body and mind. So Dogen came to his teacher Ru Jing in China, and one day Ru Jing preached to his assembly at early morning Zazen, saying, "Zazen is a dropping away of body and mind." Dogen, hearing this, suddenly had great realization. He went at once to the abbot's chambers and offered incense. So there he is, offering incense. Yeah. And the teacher says, "Why do you offer incense?" Dogen said, "Body and mind have come dropped away." Offering incense. And the teacher says, Ru Jing says, "Body and mind dropped away, body and mind." Dogen said, "That is a momentary achievement. Your reverence must not confirm me too hastily." The teacher said, "I do not confirm you hastily." Dogen said, "What is this not hastily confirming?" Ruijing said, "The dropped away body and mind." Then Dogen made his bows. Yeah? And then the teacher said again, "Dropped away body and mind." Right there. At that time, his attendant, Kohei, of the teacher's attendant, said, "It is truly not a trifling thing for a foreigner to attain such a degree of understanding." And the teacher said, "Before he came here, he received the blows of many fists. Sometimes he was dropped away and composed. Sometimes he was like a bolt of thunder." So when we have that opportunity here, when we sit, Shikantaza is this great living fact of this unstoppable river of who we are. It is the dropped away body and mind coming forth as this. Jack Cornfield said, "Sometimes the letting go is so deep our whole identity drops away. In these transformative moments, nirvana is experienced as a void, vast space, timeless presence, or as a luminous emptiness of all things. Sometimes the peace and happiness of nirvana is, as Shunryu Suzuki said, when you realize the fact that everything changes and you find your composure in it, there you find yourself in nirvana." So let go into this moment, into this unstoppable river of causes and conditions. Let go of the grasping and the clinging and attachment to experiences and ideas and recognition, wanting recognition. Rest in that unconditioned, pure awareness, Wu Wei, in this ancient, timeless ground here and now, where there is no one binding you. When we rest in this, time drops away, self drops away. The one who suffers is released. There is freedom and release. And we are simply the awareness of it all.
This talk has been freely offered. If you'd like to learn more about Sydney Zen Centre activities or to make a donation, please visit www.szc.org.au. Thank you for listening.